This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
It takes a lot of hard work to make it look easy. This Mother's Day, Duluth Trading Co. can help you give her something that keeps up. Whether you prefer to shop online or in-store, Duluth has a motherload of gear, goods, and gifts to keep her comfortable and capable, no matter what needs doing. With Duluth's problem-solving details and legendary durability to boot, you'll finally be mom's favorite again. Check out DuluthTrading.com for all your Mother's Day gifting needs.
And action! Hello and welcome to episode 391 of the Filmmakers Podcast. This is a podcast where we talk
filmmaking,
from indie film to studio films and
everything in between.
How to get them made, how to make them, and how to try not to
royally F them up.
In our very, very humble opinion, I am Giles Alderson. I'm a writer, director, and producer.
I am Dom Lenoir, and I am the same. Not the same as in I'm Giles, but the same as in my career.
Your career?
Yeah. Yeah. And slightly different.
Slightly different. Yeah. Slightly different. So you're the... I think you're the same as me. Like Dick and Dom, Batman
exactly.
Deck.
Exactly. Yeah.
Laurel and Hardy. Yeah? There's no difference.
Yep.
It's just one line, one word.
Yep. Exactly.
On the show today, we have the actor and producer, Ty Sheridan. Ty is a fantastic actor. I remember seeing him in...
The Tree of Life was definitely the first movie, but I really think Mud was the first one where I was like, whoa, who's this guy? I mean, like,
I agree, because in Tree of Life he was one of the kids and he was fantastic in it, but he was one of the kids. Whereas Mud, playing Ellis, he was fantastic opposite Matthew McConaughey, which was Jeff Nichols' film.
Yeah, shout out to Jeff Nichols, who's on the pod later alongside Sarah Green.
Yes,
for Bike Riders when that gets released.
Absolutely, that'll be hopefully less than a month away. Brilliant director. But we're here to talk about Asphalt City, which is Ty Sheridan's latest film, which he also produced. He set up his new production company and he produced it. He plays Ollie Cross. What else would our listeners learn?
His journey as an actor, his breakthroughs with Tree of Life and Mud, and how he developed through his career, working with Spielberg on Ready Player One, and his first film, Asphalt City, with his production company, as we've just discussed, as well as creating his own AI tech firm that works in the film industry.
Wow, pretty cool. Ty Sheridan is one of those actors who you'll have seen in movies. I've just always thought he was fantastic. And like I said in last week's episode, I saw him in Cannes with Francis Annan, the director, just wandering around. I was like, hello, mate. Hello, you all right? Which is really nice, you know. You've seen him wandering around as well.
As he was exiting the screening of the premiere, which we discussed on the episode, so I won't go and do it now.
On Asphalt City?
Yes, that's right. And if you want to know how you get to see a premiere like that, other than being sort of gifted tickets by a sympathetic friend, is you have to get up at 6 or 7 or some godforsaken hour in the morning, because the Cannes ticketing system is so horrific. And then you have to log on multiple devices, probably in a state of sort of hangover or stupor because you've gone to bed extremely late, because it can. And then you have to pray to the gods of technology that somehow your click gets you that premiere ticket. That's how it works.
Cannes is a magical, weird... it's hard to understand place, but once you get to know it, it is fantastic. And for those of you who are going perhaps for the first time, then do check out Yes She Can. This is Faith Elizabeth's workshop with Yes She Can, the how-to intensive workshop at the Met Film School on April the 13th, and it is open to the public. It is a 4-hour workshop for all genders going to Cannes or planning to go in the future, basically explaining the festival, but also an interactive section on networking, mindset and strategy. And you, dear listener, can get a discount on this amazing course, 20% off with the code FILM pod. And the money raised from this workshop is going towards supporting them in Cannes, where they're hosting a women's only villa, offering places at cost price to support their guests further. Ticket link is in the show notes. Yes, she can. Go to tickettailor.com/events/yes-she-cans. It's can with an S on the end. It's pronounced yeah. can.
Don't do way. That. Don't be that person that goes to yeah. can and says cans.
Yeah.
It's an instant laugh from
the French people.
Any old
like
snob that's been more than a few times.
And also, we have a surviving Cannes blog as well on our website. I'll put that in this week's show notes as well. But Ty Sheridan, let's get back to him a second. Asphalt City. Well, how would you describe the film, Dom?
Well, it's a mix of a hyper-real trauma-inducing experience in the life of emergency service workers and just how chaotic and challenging their lives are and some of the outrageously difficult situations that they have to sort of deal with. And then on the other side, there's a real surrealist flair that the director sort of comes up with and imparts into the tone, which we go into on the episode.
It also stars Sean Penn as well as Michael Pitt and Catherine Waterstone, and Mike Tyson makes an impression as well as Kelly Reese, who obviously was one of the stars of Issa Lopez's True Detective Night Country very recently as well, which is excellent. It is an unforgiving look at the psychological brutality endured by two New York City METs as they provide treatment for the bloody beaten and dying. So it's Sheridan and his burnt out partner, which is played by Sean Penn, but they basically force medicine into their patients' bodies, which ironically erodes their own life force. And actually, Ty Sheridan, do you talk about this in the episode? Because he spent some time riding around.
Yes, we go deeply into that actually in on ambulances. The episode about his, doing the ride-alongs. That was really exciting hearing about that.
Right, there you go. It's directed by Jean-Stéphane Sauveur. His film before this was A Prayer Before Dawn. So yeah, it's going to be a good one. Ty Sheridan, should we list off some of his other credits?
Yeah, we got Joe with Nicolas Cage. Mm-hmm. Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse. That was a fun one.
Yeah.
Definitely memorable in X-Men Apocalypse.
As Cyclops.
Yep, as Cyclops. And also X-Men Dark Phoenix. He was in All Summer's End, the indie classic. Deadpool 2, The Card Counter with Oscar Isaacs. Ready Player One, the Spielberg mega film. And The Tender Bar.
Which was directed by George Clooney.
Yes,
and obviously produced by Grant Heslov, our wonderful friend. Friend of the podcast.
Is there anyone who hasn't been on the podcast?
There's not many. There's not many now.
No one worth their salt. No one worth their salt.
No, you can't say that because there's lots of people worth their salt. Love it.
All right, fine. Yeah. Admit that.
All right, well, let's get to it then. This is Dom Lenoir chatting with the wonderful actor and now producer Ty Sheridan. But first, here's the trailer for Asphalt City.
You believe in heaven?
I don't know if I believe in heaven, but I believe in hell.
One, two, three.
How long you been on the job?
A few weeks.
This guy from Colorado, I'm putting him in with Russ.
I usually get here 10 minutes early. I like to ride with partners who do too.
Yes, sir.
Tune me. If you don't tell me.
Go, go, go.
You think these people like you?
Outside with the dog. We're trying to treat them.
I mean, yes, Madrid.
You think you're saving people?
I give you about 2 weeks.
What's going on? 30-year-old female. She just gave birth. Took some heroin for the pain. How's the baby?
I know what you're thinking. Is it worth it?
It's the job. I did what I thought was right.
You ain't got what it takes for this life here.
You start doing this because you want to help people.
I'm one of those rascals.
Let's go, let's get a life here.
Sometimes you just end up doing the complete opposite.
Kowalski. Intentionally withhold treatment.
What am I doing?
Helping people get better.
I'm worried about you. You need help.
I told them it was a mistake.
Get away from me.
Seriously, man, be careful.
We all work in the darkness. You don't gotta let it inside you.
You ain't got what it takes for this life, yeah.
Where are you based at the moment, Ty?
I'm currently in LA. Well, not really LA, Manhattan Beach.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
So how are you doing anyway? How's life at the moment?
I'm good. I'm very extremely busy, but good. You know, all really good things. Yeah,
because you're juggling quite a few different hats at the moment, which we'll sort of come to on the episode. Because we're basically a filmmaking podcast, so we cover kind of all facets of the filmmaking experience. And obviously you're an actor, you've got a production company, and there's also the AI sort of side of things. So there's quite a lot you're doing at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah, no, it's quite a lot. But it's good, you know, it keeps me busy and it's all really exciting.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm not sure if you probably you probably don't remember, but I actually met you very briefly at Cannes, because we both happened to be walking out of the premiere of, at the time it was called Black Flies, is that right?
Ah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So as you go out the building, there's like a sort of semi outside bit, and I think I said hello to you and said well done on the film.
Oh, cool. Well, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
No, it's no problem at all. Because I've been following your career for quite a while actually, and I remember the first time I watched Mud, and I was, you know, incredibly impressed. Because I, you know, I'm also a director, and
mm-hmm.
I'm always looking for actors that can internalize and really sort of go into the emotion of the role. Mm-hmm. I remember being like really impressed that you were just a very raw actor that you know, had all this kind of stuff going on inside.
Thanks, man.
Right, my cup.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you for seeing it.
Yeah, no problem. So, I mean, let's sort of start with Asphalt City, which is, it's now been sort of renamed.
Mm-hmm.
And just to sort of give a bit of context, that you're a producer on this one as well. Did I get that right?
I'm a producer on the film.
So what was the inception of this? I mean, does this sort of come from you wanting to create roles that are more interesting for yourself? I mean, where did the idea come from for this film?
Well, I mean, I think mostly, for the most part, my decisions are very filmmaker driven. And this project has actually been around for a really, really, really long time. I was shooting a film in Utah in 2018. John Stefan, the director, actually came to Utah to visit, and we spent, you know, a few hours together over a weekend. And, you know, I was very busy at the time shooting this film. And, you know, I was kind of, you know, not really interested in having wanted to kick the conversation down the road and have it after we wrapped production.
Yeah.
And he insisted that he came, and I saw his films, and immediately was really blown away by Jean Stefan's work. I don't know if you've seen his films like Johnny Mad Dog or A Prayer Before Dawn, but these films are very visceral and hyper real. And I think, you know, Asphalt City, it does this thing where it kind of ebbs and flows between something that is hyper real and something that is a bit more ethereal. And I think that was very appealing to me. But the movie's about paramedics in New York City. And I think, you know, we have some films like Bringing Out the Dead, you know, that are about these people in New York City. But I think, you know, we haven't to date had a film that got super close and really showed us being public, you know, what these people experience on a daily level. And I think they're key contributors to our society. They play a key role. And I think a lot of people don't really understand what their lives are like. And so I think, you know, it was partly that. It was partly like, mm-hmm. you know, to work with John Stefan to, you know, make this really cool movie about medics, these really important people in our society, and try to shine a light on them, you know, incredible things that they do and some of the really difficult stuff that they go through. And then it was also very early stages. You know, the film was, script still needed to be developed, you know, so I came on as a producer. And yeah, again, that was 2018. So we're pushing this film up the hill for years, and finally made the movie in New York in 2022.
We'll come back to the sort of the mood and the tone, because, you know, visceral is definitely the word. I mean, I remember watching that for the first time, and you're there with the paramedics, and, you know, you feel every bit of the trauma that they feel, and your character feels as much as the, you know, the people that are injured. It really does show like what an intense, you know, job it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is sort of fascinating. But how did the director get in contact with you in the first place? I mean, was this sort of through your agent? Okay, I've got an idea. You know, is Ty available? Is he interested in sort of discussing things? Were you floating the idea that you were looking to produce stuff at this time? How did that sort of initial?
Yeah, it was a unique one, because typically I have complete tunnel vision when I'm working on a film, because, I mean, you know what it's like. You're especially these days, you know, you have less and less time to make films, and so you're constantly up against the clock, and
definitely,
you know, you just the only space you have to think about is what you have to do next, and that goes on for months sometimes, and then you come out of it. So yeah, generally I'm not, you know, that like open to discussing other projects or looking at other projects while I'm working on a film, especially when my schedule is so intense. But in this case, you know, I think it was, you know, probably my team and my manager was, you know, really pushing me to see his films. And as soon as I saw John Stefan's work, I was just like, I had to meet this guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's the best. And he's a true auteur filmmaker. He's, you know, every filmmaker has to make certain concessions, right? But for the most part, I mean, he's really uncompromising in the integrity of his vision. And I think that I really appreciate and respect. So yeah, that's how it happened.
Yeah. So what were some of the kind of, you know, early conversations? Obviously you're on set, and as you said, it's all encompassing, it's exhausting. You're sort of getting through day by day and remember, you know, figuring out the lines and blocking and all the complications of each part of the shoot. So, I mean, once you managed to get your head more into this zone and you started to look at the script and the character, what were some of the early sort of discussions that you were having, like where the script was versus maybe what's, you know, things that you might want to add into the character or how you saw things?
Yeah, you know, the film is based on a book by Shannon Burke.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, initially the draft was much closer to the book. And several people had the rights to the book in the past, by the way. I think at some point Darren Aronofsky had the rights and was trying to adapt it, and told me he just could never felt like he could get it right. And so it was a challenging one to figure out. I think ultimately, you know, the film, you know, is really became, you know, something of its own. So, you know, less, more loosely following the, you know, the narrative kind of structure of the book, more taking from it its essence. And so I think Jean Stefan, the way he works is, you know, he gets really, really, really just integrated into the society and the world that he's making a movie about. And you've seen his films, you would understand. But for instance, John Stefan is going around the community in New York with his camera, meeting different people, going to different medical facilities, hospitals, talking to different medics, doing ride-alongs, you know, pulling me in to get involved in the process. So we were doing ride-alongs off and on for like 4 or 5 years leading up to making the film. So we'd come to New York and we'd ride along. And I think a lot of the, you know, the script that we ultimately you know, ended up with making the film came out of that.
Yeah.
It just came out of these meetings with people and hearing their stories. And, you know, there are a lot of medics who are our advisors on the picture that, you know, would tell us stories, and they're almost not quite verbatim, but they end up in the film. You know, their stories are in the film, inspired by the stories that the characters tell in the film. So that's a lot of how Sean Stefan works, you know? And so it was definitely a long evolution with the script. But anyway, it's kind of hard to remember. It's been so long now. It's so many iterations.
And I suppose the thing is, it's always so immersive as well, and it's thousands of little things that add up over time, and then you sort of embody it. So it, you know, in a way, it's in the back of your subconscious, isn't it? I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
So I mean, you know, the ride-alongs and the medic side. I mean, that gives you a lot of depth to draw from, basically, and I suppose from your character's kind of experiences and motivations. I mean, was there anything on the character side, just in terms of more like the arc and the stuff outside of, you know, where the book was developed, you know, ideas or ways that the character sort of interacted with other people that you were interested in developing, or was that more sort of through the, you know, working with the other actors and the director discussions?
I think the biggest thing that comes to mind is the, you know, the symbology in the film, the Archangel Michael.
Yeah.
And, you know, these medics, really, they are kind of, you know, in a way, the angels of society, you know, guiding people, you know, to the light, and really like the shepherds of our injured or broken souls. And, you know, we played a lot with this idea that, you know, cross being, you know, carrying this, representing the symbol of a guardian angel or the archangel. You can see it. He even has the poster in his room. But yeah, there are all of these kind of more spiritual, metaphysical, you know, things going on in the film. And I think that's why, you know, I said earlier that the film kind of ebbs and flows between something that's hyper real and something that's very surreal and metaphysical. And I think that's largely, like, you know, the things that were really exciting to me to play. But yeah, you know, because Jean Stefan's films are so immersive and the camera sees everything, you know, and a lot of times you're shooting 10-minute long takes, and you're performing like a real medic, you know. So there was not much faking it you could do. You know, obviously you're not going to stick a needle on somebody while you're rolling, but you know, beyond that, everything was pretty real, which is always, you know, the best for an actor, right? As real as it can feel, you know, the more it allows you to immerse yourself in that world and your character. But that's why we spent, you know, 2 months doing ride-alongs, 3 or 4 nights a week, doing 12-hour shifts leading up to the when we were shooting, and outside of that, we were in a classroom environment with senior medics who were our advisors, mostly from Wyckoff Hospital in Brooklyn, and they were, you know, basically just teaching us how to become medics. And so there were a lot of, you know, our rehearsal essentially was, you know, sometimes me and Sean getting together and, you know, walking into a room and treating this dummy as if we were, you know, treating a real person. And so you kind of develop this rapport and, you know, a familiarity with the work that you're doing. And that, you know, the ultimate goal is that it becomes second nature, of course.
Yeah.
You know, for someone like, you know, for someone like me, Or for instance, in Sean's case, when you're playing a veteran medic who's like a 30-year veteran medic, you know, it's hard.
It has to be instinctual.
Yeah, it has to be completely instinctual, right? So I think that was for us like the big focus, you know. And I think Jean Stefan was really wanted for us to feel, you know, like we knew what we were doing, and it was an amazing experience. You know, it was very, very intense, and, you know, very overwhelming at times. You know, I think that this movie, however, looking at it from the outside, maybe it doesn't seem like super technical, but in terms of the performance and playing a medic, it was very, very, very technical, right? And I found that to be a very challenging aspect of the role.
Yeah, I can imagine, because I suppose in one sort of aspect you could, that there's elements where it could help you if you're focusing on a task that you're really focused on in the scene. But then at the same time, I suppose you're trying to work around these character relationships and you know, where you're trying to go in the scene, and it's kind of juggling all those things, I imagine.
Totally. And in a way, I think, you know, my character and Sean's character are really, they're kind of a mirror to each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like, you know, I'm looking at myself if I continue on this path, you know, for the next 30 years and vice versa. So it's kind of there was a fascinating kind of element to play there between the two characters, almost being one and the same.
Yeah, very much so. So, how do you like to rehearse? And, you know, do you like to do a lot of rehearsal? I mean, in this kind of thing, I'm guessing there's a lot of sort of stunt rehearsals in terms of what you're doing with the medical procedures. But I mean, what's your, you know, preference as an actor? Do you like to have a lot of discussions in advance sort of about the scenes? Do you like to run the exact lines? Do you like to sort of play around with things? Like, what's your kind of favorite approach?
Oh man, it really depends on the role. It really depends on the film. I think, you know, each film is like its own island, and you got to figure out how to navigate that island. You know, I think a lot of times, like, yeah, if it's more of, like, for instance, this film was so immersive. You're constantly working across from non actors. And working with people from, you know, the actual world that the movie takes place in. And so you're just kind of, you know, sometimes rolling with whatever someone else is doing. You've got to be very receptive and very open to what they're doing and open to responding to it, you know. And a lot of times, really beautiful things come out of that, right? And I think, you know, I had some filmmaker friends that saw the film and they were like, wow, how did you guys do this? How did you do, you know, it's, I think that's the really exciting thing in terms of like a film like this, when you get people scratching their heads, like wondering how you actually pulled that off, because it seems so real. Yeah. So that was a big one on this film. Of course, you know, like I said, the roles are, it's very, very technical, demand something very technical from us. And yes, like, I think there's some level of, you know, improvisation and you know, receiving what someone's doing across from you. It's really not an actor. And so there's those kind of things are almost impossible to rehearse, but the more conversations you have with medics, the more stories that you hear, the more time you spend around these people, the more, you know, being like them becomes second nature, right? So you do know how medics react when, you know, someone doesn't want to get in the ambulance because you've seen it. And I think though that for us was really valuable, you know, just being immersed in the world and being around medics, asking them questions. So, you know, typically like love having conversations about the material, the work, you know, everything about, you know, the film that we're making. When it comes to actual rehearsal for this one, it was very technical. And for other films I've done, I mean, it's, you're rehearsing the dialogue, you know, you're rehearsing the blocking, over and over. And I think, yeah, so it really depends. It depends on the film, depends on the character, depends on, you know, your filmmaker that you're working with and, you know, whoever you're acting opposite. So,
yeah. And I suppose for something like this, you know, again, you're reacting off the situations, you're becoming you've got your own internal workings for the character, and you've got the goals of the medic. But what was it like working with non-actors? I mean,
when I say non-actors, I'm mostly referencing people that don't have any scripted lines. You know, there's just a scene, and you know, they're, for instance, the laundromat scene in the film. There's a woman sleeping in the laundromat. You know, they call because she's, you know, intoxicated or passed out or whatever. And so we show up and, you know, whatever she's saying, none of that is scripted. You know, she's just, whatever comes to her mind in that moment, she's saying, and then we're reacting. Right. Yeah. And I've done, you know, I've like my very first film I ever worked on was this movie called The Tree of Life. And I never saw a script. I never had any lines to memorize. So in a way, it's kind of how I started. You know, it always comes very natural to me just to react in the scene. You know, they say acting is reacting. But, you know, I've also worked on films. Like, I did a movie called with David Gordon Green and Nick Cage called Joe. And so a lot of times it was Nick and I, and then, you know, 20 non-actors who were just saying all kinds of crazy stuff, and you're reacting and making a scene out of it. And I think it becomes really fun, you know, when you have, like, because, you know, in your back pocket, you know what the scene is about, you know what you need from the scene, what the scene needs, and you're trying to figure out how to get it there with someone who doesn't know. And so it becomes this very interesting kind of chess match.
Yeah, and an adaptive goal, I guess. You know, you're still sort of getting to the finish line. You're just actually actively trying to get something from someone, and those, whether an actor or a non-actor, you know, you're using the toolkits that you've learned and the background research to sort of get to the same point, I suppose.
Right.
So just talking about the producing side of this movie, I mean, you know, casting some of the other actors, I mean, Sean Penn is an incredible actor. And he's got so much depth and kind of that you know, unpredictability that's fascinating to watch. Was that part of, I mean, how did he get involved? What were some of the other sort of elements that you wanted to bring in on the, you know, the producing side once you got?
So funny. So like I said, the very first film I worked on was a movie called The Tree of Life, which Sean was in. Terrible. And so I met Sean when I was a kid. I think it was 11 years old when we worked on that film. And you know, I remember having a few interactions with him, and one really funny interaction, actually. We were shooting on the Gulf Coast in Texas, and we were staying at the house right next to Sean. And so he came back from work one day, and my mom and my family were all sitting on the front porch, and they said, run over there and ask Sean if he wants a beer. And so I ran across the yard and I said, hey Sean, my mom wants to know if you want to come over and have a cold beer. And he said, sure, I'll take a beer from the 11-year-old bartender. He came over and had a beer with us and hung out. And so, you know, we're like loosely familiar with each other, but I hadn't seen each other in a while. And like I said, this project took years to get going. And all along, Jean Stefan really, really wanted Sean. You know, that was his first choice. And so I emailed Sean years ago, probably 3-4 years ago, and maybe longer. And I told him, you know, hey, I was the 11-year-old bartender. They gave you a beer, and we want to make this movie with you. And he was very familiar with Jean Stefan's work, and they knew each other. And I kind of just, you know, sent him a personal note. And I think at that time, you know, he was in a very different place. This was before all the Malibu fires and COVID. And so, you know, Sean has a history with it through his organization, you know, working with these kind of people, but he got very close to these first responders through the fires and COVID and everything he was doing with CORE. And initially, you know, he said, it's just, you know, not for me right now. And then, you know, we went back to him years later, and I think his entire perspective had changed, and, you know, wanted to come and join us on the film. So it was kind of an amazing experience. We went full circle. You know, we had at one point where we're going to make the film with Mel Gibson, and then, you know, scheduling conflicts, inability to finance the film, you know, just technical things didn't work out. And so we ended up going back to Sean, so that was really amazing.
And what was your kind of your process, I guess, for, you know, collaborating with him? Was it part of just the immersion on the ride alongs? Like, I mean, do you do other kind of development, you know, outside of that, sort of conversations with Sean about your existing relationship? Is that not as useful to you? I mean, how does that sort of side of things work?
I'm not quite sure I understand your question.
I guess just building that relationship with Sean, because I mean, obviously you're kind of thrown in there and you've got a bond with him very quickly. Like, what was the process once he was attached to the movie? Was most of the prep with that relationship to do with, you know, the rehearsals that we mentioned earlier, or were you picking his brains a lot to sort of figure out your characters and how you interacted with each other?
I think we were kind of leaning on each other, you know, because we're both in this boat, in the same boat, trying to figure this out, trying to make it look like, you know, we're real medics and going through the training together. And that was a big part of it. You know, we really kind of leaning on each other, and we'll get together and practice and stuff like that. And, but yeah, I think, and then we were just, you know, Sean's a great filmmaker. So it's really fun. You know, just working with someone like that, because, you know, someone as seasoned and as experienced and, you know, that has all the sensibilities, you know, like I said, we shot this movie in 23 days, yeah. So that's very intense, as you could imagine. And in New York, is very uncompromising, unforgiving.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a hell, you know, in a way, but a beautiful hell. And I think, you know, everybody was really leaning on each other. So to have someone next to you, you know, like Sean, who's knows exactly what we need and knows how to get there and understands all the challenges and understands, you know, the process of making films and, you know, what's important, what's not. It's super, super valuable. So yeah, it was really amazing. We had some amazing collaborators and ultimately was really, you know, this is kind of a passion project for me that I couldn't stop thinking about for years. And so I was really happy to finally go in and get it made.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, the reception at Cannes was, you know, extraordinary. I mean, you know, there was such an energy, and everyone in the audience was completely on the edge of their seats. I mean, it was, you know, you basically had a room of some of the best filmmakers in the world that were completely gripped. So I think it certainly paid off on it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it's for us. I mean, that was always the goal. You know, we always really wanted to end up in that room. And to play there in competition was really special. I actually, you know, the Cannes Film Festival was really special place for me. I think it's really the place that I realized the power of cinema. I was 15 years old or 16 years old, something like that. And we were premiering Mud in competition. And we had I don't know, something like a 20-minute standing ovation, and people were crying. And I until that point, I hadn't realized that, you know, a group of 40 people in the middle of nowhere in Arkansas could come together around a story. And I didn't understand how impactful it could be, you know? And so it was just this little thing until, you know, you showed it to all these people and they were so moved by it. And you realize that, you know, the magic of stories and the magic of cinema. And I think forever it was kind of like ingrained on me and you know, used into my mind and my soul. And I think, so to go back there with Asphalt City was really, really, really special.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. I mean, you know, I feel the same, especially about Cannes as well. Just, I feel like there's such a big catharsis when you are really moved by a film. And it's, you know, it's an incredible sort of roller coaster as an audience member or as a filmmaker. It's just part of being in that audience, and, you know, all the sort of pain and suffering you've put into the film, your shared experience with a whole bunch of people that have maybe had their perspectives changed, or they've released something that they had inside them through that sort of experience of watching it. And I've always, you know, I always go back to imagining those moments when I'm sitting in the auditorium in Cannes and I've watched something incredible.
You go every year?
Yeah. I think, you know, Francis Annan as well. We were out there and
sort of
hung out with him as well a bit this year.
Amazing.
But yeah, we've got our own sort of, you know, loads of people from London sort of go out, and then we, Europe friends and the American friends.
Wow, what a crazy place.
It is. Certainly is. So just going back to Mud, because I mean that is one of my favorite sort of coming of ages, and I think it's such a great film. And it would be interesting to sort of hear about your you know some of your earlier roles, because you've picked some really really good films, and it's been interesting sort of see you you developed. I mean, how did that come about, getting involved in that?
Thanks. So Sarah Green, who produced The Tree of Life.
Yes.
Produced
you there as well on the podcast.
Okay, great.
Pretty lovely, isn't she?
Yeah, she is a force.
Yes. Yeah.
And Sarah, I think really that was the link, you know, there. I guess after The Tree of Life, you know, I was auditioning for things for 3 years and, you know, doing an audition every other week and, you know, never getting any callbacks. And that went on for like 3 years. And it kind of, you know, just auditioning for things was not that much fun. I love, you know, the process of making a film. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. It was like the greatest summer camp I'd ever been to.
Yeah.
And then I realized that I hated doing auditions. And so after 3 years of doing auditions and not getting any callbacks, I think it was 14 at the time. And I told my parents, I said, I don't know if I want to do this. You know, I don't know if the acting thing is for me. I think, you know, I don't like doing these auditions and I just want to focus on school and sports and hang out with my friends. And, you know, my parents told me, well, you need to think about that decision, and because you have a manager now and he's working for you and spending his time. So you need to really think if it's something you want to continue or stop or what. I remember having this moment where I was like, well, I guess I'll just keep going for a little while and see if something shakes. And then right around that time, Sarah Green called me and she said, hey, I've got this filmmaker. His name is Jeff Nichols and he's from Arkansas and I really want you to meet him. He's got this movie. It's called Mud. And I think you guys will really get along. And so she sent me the script and I remember reading the script and immediately falling in love with it. You know, it was very close to the world that I grew up in, you know, being a teenage boy growing up in a really small town in Texas. And so Jeff and I got together and I think his main concern was, you know, would I be able to memorize lines? I'd never even, on Tree of Life, I never even read a script. And so I remember doing 3 or 4 auditions with Jeff and then ultimately, ended up getting casted, in the film. And then that was really such a special experience. We were shooting a large portion of the film on this island. It was in the middle of the Mississippi River. And so
you had to get there by boat, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For 20 minutes, we'd take this boat ride on the Mississippi River out to this island. And it was like this passage, you know, every morning you're going out there and it's the sky's all purpley right before the dawn. And you get to this island and the sun breaks and you're like, man, this is magic, you know? So there's a lot of magic that I think bled into that film.
Yeah.
And everybody, really high caliber, amazing crew and super great script. And obviously, you know, Jeff steering the ship, the talent that he is. It was a really special project.
What I liked about that film is it had so much heart, but there was also this kind of nostalgia, you know, young love and
sure
fairy tale element about, you know, going off to this, you know, magical island and mm-hmm. There was something like beyond reality that made it really special.
It captured a magic.
Yeah, it certainly did.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So, I mean, what did you learn from that experience sort of going forward as an actor. I mean, I love the fact that you said about, you know, 3 years of auditioning and what a horrible process that is. I mean, I think it's the same for directors trying to pitch because you're someone else is judging.
It's the same process for anyone trying to do anything. You know, you just keep banging your head up against the wall until it breaks.
That's it. Just keep going. I mean, that's the
yeah, that's right.
I think
that's exactly right.
Didn't things kind of change after Mud for you?
Well, I think it was like, it was the break that gave me all the next opportunities. So it went from auditioning, never getting a call back, to working on that film, and then subsequently getting cast a year later in David Gordon Green's movie. So Jeff and David went to school together, and so they go way back, and then after that, it was then Mud released and had a great reception at Cannes, and you know, had a great reception all around. And then suddenly kind of became, you know, like all of a sudden I had a little momentum, and yeah, I just really started riding the momentum and trying to find, you know, great filmmakers to work with. And I think that became more of a conscious kind of effort as I went along, and got more familiar with cinema and, you know, what it meant to have a good director.
Yeah.
And, how important it was. And so yeah, a lot of my decisions are really filmmaker driven. You know, I really love working with great filmmakers. It's really special.
So it's not just the script that you're looking for something specific in terms of a story or a character. Is it kind of the overall?
I mean, in an ideal world, it's everything, right? It's the, you know, the cast around you. It's a great script. It's, you know, you have, you know, the budget you need to go make the movie. You have a great director.
Yeah,
you have great producers. I mean, ultimately, it's, you know, it's, but those projects are very rare.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't tell you how many amazing scripts with great filmmakers that, you know, I've seen or been attached to and just crossing my fingers, really hoping they were going to break through and just never did, you know, and they just sit on a shelf somewhere. And some of the best scripts I've ever read are just out there, never been made. Which is crazy to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's like, wait, as an actor waiting to be discovered. Sometimes there's so many great filmmakers and scripts that just never quite get to the right
100%. And I think you have to ask yourself, you know, it's like you have to be persistent to create the moment of opportunity. And when you create the moment of opportunity, you have to seize it and just follow it.
Yeah.
And ride that opportunity as far as you can. And I think if you're persistent, it will come.
Yeah.
You know, but I think without persistence, it's really hard to create that. And yeah, sometimes it takes 6 months, sometimes it takes a year, sometimes it takes 20 years.
Yeah.
And I think we've heard run of the gamut on those stories. But yeah, it's fascinating just because, you know, you're not getting the opportunities that you want, it doesn't mean that, you know, you lack the talent or you lack the ideas or that your project is lacking. And sometimes it's just a matter of right time and right place and
definitely
being persistent to get to that opportunity.
I mean, like, you know, with you and Sean, for instance, I mean, that's a great example.
Exactly. You know, didn't work the first time around. And then, you know, suddenly the timing was right and, you know, everything was aligned and it ended up working out.
Yeah. So what was it like sort of moving up to, in budget wise, to something like Ready Player One? I mean, it's quite a big, you know, a big amount to, you know, carry on your shoulders, I guess, you know, very established director who's, you know, one of the biggest in the game. I mean, what was that sort of moment like?
I don't know if I really, like, you know, maybe it's partly because I'm young, I was young and dumb, but I guess I wasn't really thinking about it like that. You know, I mean, obviously you feel the responsibility, but you feel the responsibility on any film, you know, that you have to show up and you have to deliver and you have to be the best that you can be and the best filmmaker you can be and collaborator. It's really no different whether the movie is, you know, $200,000 or $200 million, that is still always the same. You know, so it's the same pressure. Of course, like different bells and whistles, and you know, a longer shooting schedule, and you know, more kind of more elements going on. But but yeah, it was, you know, I guess, you know, that was really interesting because it was very technical. We were shooting in motion capture for like 8 weeks, and yeah, you know, it was very much like I never really worked on stage before, but that's the closest experience I've had. Very physical and kind of technical, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, fantastic. So just to, I know we haven't got too much longer to chat, but I'd be interested just to know about what you're doing in the sort of the AI sector, that sort of side of your work as well, because we've sort of covered a lot of your filmmaking sort of things.
Yeah, you have to be very careful with how you talk about AI these days. It's a very controversial topic, but I started a company with a friend of mine, Nikola Todorovich, and we co-founded a company called Wonder Dynamics several years ago. And essentially what Wonder Dynamics' mission is to try to enable filmmaking tools and access to tools, essentially making tools more accessible for filmmakers that want to create some CG or effects in their projects, and really kind of leveraging AI and machine learning models to do so. Yeah. You know, we launched back in July of last year, a platform called Wonder Studio, which is a web-based cloud platform that essentially allows you to upload any video and then take the actor's performance and retarget that to basically extract the animation data out of the scene.
Oh, cool.
And the lighting and your camera info, and then you can extract that and take it into a 3D software so that you have, you kind of building your shot, so to speak, in a much more efficient way. And so it's trying to speed up the visual effects process and try to get you 80% there so that visual effects are more attainable. And it's not, you know, really not using AI to replace actors or replace the effects artists or anything like that. It's really about making their process, you know, more efficient, and also making these effects more accessible for like indie filmmakers, right? So the whole mission is to try to deliver to indie filmmakers what studios can do, but on a budget.
Great. It's an amazing, amazing sentiment. Just a 30-second question, because I know we've got to wrap up in 1 minute. If there's any advice for maybe filmmakers who are trying to, you know, get you interested in a project, is there anything, any sort of tips or tricks of, I mean, you know, do you like letters or script?
You mean just general advice in terms of like how to cast your film, or you just mean in general, or
just trying to, you know, if someone's interested in you know, attaching you to a project, say.
Oh, okay. I don't know. You know, I think, you know, like I said, for me, I'm really driven by someone's work. You know, so I'm really interested. First, my question is like, you know, what kind of work have they done, and like what's their perspective? You know, what's their style? You know, is it unique, and is it do they have their own voice? And I think, yeah, you know, letters are nice, I guess, but you know, I think, you know, just in general, I feel like, you know, for filmmakers, it's nice for them to see that they're trying to capture their own magic, you know, that they're doing something that feels unique to themselves, not like they're trying to copy somebody or do something that's been done before. And I think, you know, finding filmmakers that are standout filmmakers is really my goal in terms of finding collaborators. So yeah, I think that's, for me, really important.
That's fantastic. Well, I mean, thanks so much for chatting, Ty. It's been a really nice chat. And
yeah, thanks for having me.
Delightful. So yeah.
Yeah, good chatting with you, man.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Dom Noir. Dom Noir's chat with Ty Sheridan. That was fun.
I really enjoyed this chat with Ty, because you know, he's one of those actors like Nee Valgar that I've sort of been watching for a long time, you know, in their sort of early career, and I watched them and I was like, this is going to be someone who's going to be absolutely amazing. Yeah, just a really interesting, honest, real actor. I thought the same with Saoirse Ronan as well, seeing her in Hannah all those years ago. Like, you know, this is going to be a mega star one of these days. Yeah. It's great seeing these young talents kind of develop into adult actors.
It really is. I think it's time now. We've sort of hit that
high.
Yeah, we hit that sort of moment of the Colin Farrells and the Jude Laws, yeah. You know, 10, 20, 15 years ago, and there hasn't been a new wave. And yet suddenly in the last couple of years, with Timothée Chalamet, Austin Butler and Ty Sheridan, you know, that list goes on of those young breakthrough actors, Florence Pugh, Zendaya. Yeah.
Thomas and McKenzie as well.
Exactly. The list, which is really nice now. There's this wonderful new list of brilliant actors breaking through and doing really well and actually selling movies, you know, being the name on the movie poster that can get movies made, which is really important for us.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, if you look at Chalamet, I mean, you know, he's just been offered a first look slash, well, it's more than a first look deal, actually. It's just it's a deal with Warner Brothers, is it, I think?
Yeah, I think it was.
Warner Brothers, yeah. So he's been offered this deal with Warner Brothers. I mean, that's the kind of thing, you know, you have to be a major movie star. And that kind of, you know, there used to be those kind of level of actors that would work in the industry, and it's not really been done with this kind of new wave of actors yet. So it does show that they're starting to be, you know, incredibly bankable.
Yes.
The next wave of megastars.
Anna Taylor-Joy, another one. You know, Jacob Tremblay, Nkuti Gatwa, Kelvin, and friend of the podcast, Kelvin Harrison Jr., Finn Wolfhard. You know, you can name anyone from the Stranger Things gang. But yeah, it's really good, I think, that this is making a difference, because it does for us as filmmakers. Because if we want to cast, you know, you've got two 20-year-olds in your movie, you need names, and those names are really hard to come by that mean anything.
Usually if you've got 20-year-old actors, you need like some big actor in the background that's like an older supporting lead. Yeah. But if the 20-year-olds are the, you know, the big names, then you don't need
that. Exactly, and that's it. And now, you know, 5-10 years ago, we didn't have those 20-year-old actor names, not really, not that we could get, whereas now there's a lot, and therefore, you know, with the big TV shows, there's the breakouts, and that really does make a difference for us. So yeah, I'm really delighted for that. You know, it's about time with the new wave of actors coming through.
Yeah, no, that's the Justin Timberlake film, About Time.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's not. Damn it. I always get the two confused. That's the Domhnall Gleeson, Rachel McAdams one.
Oh, it is, yeah.
I think it's Just in Time.
No, it's not Just in Time, because he's Justin Timberlake.
No, In Time.
In Time or something.
Time. I mean, Justin Time.
Right, until next Tuesday, when we have on...
I think we scooped up a couple of guests, didn't we?
We did, but they're not going to be next week. We've got the new Netflix drama, Scoop. We recorded that one, but it's not going to be next week. Next week is going to be, very likely, Matthew Butlerhart and Tori Butlerhart talking about their movie Dagger, which they shot on iPhones for very little money, and it has smashed cinemas all around the UK, and it is about to be released on streaming services. So they will be joining us, I imagine, next week. We need to find time to record that. But if not, upcoming episodes include Scoop, as we've mentioned there, Netflix's latest one, which is all about Prince Andrew. Not a scandal, really, but when he went on to Newsnight.
Yeah, it's the Epstein side story. It's the Newsnight. Yeah. It's really about the Newsnight sort of build up and how that interview came about.
So me and Dom watched it the other day, and the performances are outstanding, like unbelievable performances from Rufus Sewell and Gillian Anderson and the team. Just Billy Piper never lets you down.
And Keely Hawes.
And Keely Hawes, fantastic. And then we've also got Kung Fu Panda with Mike Mitchell. That's coming up, as well as
Pandemonium.
Yeah, No Way Up, Andy Roger and Claudio Farr very soon. That
Andrew Beard Roger.
Yes, indeed. So we've got their film No Way Up, which is coming out very soon, which is the shark movie set in an aeroplane, which is amazing. It really is really good. So loads of great stuff coming up. But for now, go watch Asphalt City, starring Ty Sheridan, which he's produced from his brand new production company. It is in cinemas now. Cool. Until next Tuesday.
See you later.
Thanks, Dom.
Thanks, Charles.
Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.